Hello and welcome to Liberty Southwest podcast number 28. This week we're going to discuss IS/ISIS/ISIL, not to be confused with the International Space Station. We're talking about the Islamic State, from where and how it began to what goals and motivations are there for it in this loose-knit organization. And we have a fantastic introductory clip, as usual, from Eric, but I think before we start, we'll just have a little brief conversation about the entire movement and what it is. Mm-hmm. Eric, got a couple comments?
Sure. This is a topic that Kirk brought up. And Kirk, why did you bring this up?
Well, it's in the news always, but... Right. I just think it's a load of crap mostly, and I thought it'd be fun to dive down deep into it and see what's out there, do a little research.
When you say a load of crap, like, what do you mean? Why do you think that's a load of crap?
I think a lot of it is a hoax.
Okay. All right. That makes a lot more sense.
And I can't believe that people are afraid of this group. And I think a lot of the PR is a hoax. I think the group exists, and sure. I just can't believe that we as the country of United States of America are cowering in fear over this, and it drives me crazy. So,
yeah, and I've talked to people, and they're like, what do you think of ISIS or ISIL? And I'm like, well, you know, it's a group that's really popped up on the radar over the last couple of, specifically like the last 6 months. In the Syrian, Turkish, Iraqi area, I don't think too much of them. And I've had multiple conversations along this line. They're like, "Well, do you think they'll eventually attack the United States? You know, do we need to go over there and you know make sure that they don't?"
I'm actually convinced there will be an attack on the United States, and I say, "Bring it on, mofos."
Well, I'll tell you the extent of the conversations I've had at work, and that's one guy said he's really pissed off that now the name of the spy organization in the TV show Archer is tainted. that was his biggest comment. I think there's among some people a lot of distrust and nervousness about this, but I think amongst others. They kind of see it as being this kind of bogus threat that it is, which is nice. It's not quite as 100% felt, in my opinion.
Right.
I don't think people really care, but the media is just shoving it down everyone's eye sockets, which is creating this little temporary fear. But I think further reflection, I don't think that anyone's really that scared of them. And... But our politicians and our media constantly just throwing this in our face is just disgusting. And I don't understand it, how we are such a nation of wimps all of a sudden that we fear this group that, you know, is emboldened enough to sit there and say they want to bring the attack to us. Bring it. I wish I could remember who said this, but from World War I, when this politician was being talked about these people invading, he's like, "Great, if they invade, I'll have them arrested," deeming that the police force is decent enough to take it. We had a show on the militarization of the police, how militarized our police are now could take down ISIS or ISIL.
Well, this is what I have to say about it. Find out what happens.
Yeah, exactly. I'd love to see it. But have you guys watched the Flame of War or whatever their main propaganda hour-long video they released a while ago?
No, I haven't.
I sat down and watched it last night, and yeah, it was torture.
Torture? Like, why? Like, what about it?
It's just so dumb. It's
like, in what way? Like, what was dumb about it?
It just seemed like it was like a dictation of a video game. It was like you were playing a video game and going through it.
Like, do you have a specific example?
Just how they were talking and going from one war to the next and highlighting what they were doing and what they're going to do and how it's, you know, it's just all this PR move that's supposed to create a little fear and a little amazement that they're able to do this and their might. And the weaponry they have, give me a break. Where the hell did they get all these weapons? The heavy artillery? And they're way well trained, better than I just. We'll get into this as this conversation goes, but it's my God, they these are not, they're mercenaries, and it's they've all gone through a lot of training, very well planned out in their attacks, and they're getting support
by Canada,
And they're only going to gain in popularity. That's the damning fact about this all. And I think we'll go down the rabbit hole with this, but this group was formed by – there's a lot of opinions out there, but I won't get into it yet. But it's only going to grow, and it's a sad state of mind that – a sad state of affairs that this world has to deal with these a-holes and the crap that's going to arise because of this, and that we're allowing to have it. This is such a small group, and it's giving me a break that they're running over these small towns that aren't well fortified, that aren't prepared to deal with them. And then we're sitting there saying, oh, they control this huge swath of Iraq and southern Syria, and it's, oh, any made military could wipe these guys out. No problem. And with any technology we have today, the technology we have today should be able to stamp out their frickin' economics that they have, whatever, how is their flow of money, the resources, the weaponry. It just boggles my mind how the world is allowing this to happen, and it's being encouraged.
Well, encouraged in some circles, but yeah, I totally understand what you're saying. It's a underfunded, super small. Well, maybe not underfunded for the size it is, but it's still super small.
Underfunded. They have,
They've got a lot of money.
Super small, though, and their influence is limited. And the U.S. being intimidated by this little tiny little pocket. I mean, you could almost call it like a false flag. Like, it's so small comparative to our other
propaganda.
Real threats that we should be looking at right now.
I don't believe the world's a dangerous place. I'm sorry. And what we're doing to the Middle East right now is riling up these people on the false premise of a religion of picking up the sword, picking up a gun to go fight for this jihad. And it's disgusting what...
Yeah, there's really no need for this religious war, right?
It's purely coming from the West. It's purely coming from the West to rile people up, to create this strife in the Middle East, to give us the reason to get over there. And it's just so sad to see it happen right now, and that our public is allowing our government to even spin it like this, and then at the same time feign like we're going to go be an aggressor against them. I don't see it at all that way. And for one, they're doing exactly what we want to do. We get to go into Syria, which we've been wanting to do for the whole time.
Right.
And it's sad.
Yeah, and there's you have to be somewhat skeptical. Last year, about a year or so ago, there was a significant push for action on Syria. And that was actually put down, by populist grassroots anti-interventionalist type of sentiment. And seems like, you know, to a skeptic, you've basically reframed the enemy and said, we need to bomb them in Iraq as well as Syria now.
Yeah, it's the perfect scapegoat to why we gotta go do that. But ISIS is fighting Assad. And yet, we want to take Assad out too, and yet we're against ISIL at the same time, and none of it makes sense.
I think we should just glass the whole Middle East. That's going to fix everything.
No.
No.
I want to go visit the Middle East. I love the Middle East. And it's just, it's so disheartening that we're over there stirring up a hornet's nest, trying to make all hell break loose. And to see, from the flames of war, to see the devastation of Iraq and Syria.
I don't think I'd actually like to go see that. I'd be pretty sad to see that.
See what?
The devastation.
Oh, yeah.
I think it'd be awful.
These towns are wastelands. It's like looking at old World War II videos, you know, of these towns just desolate. Just blown up buildings all over. Every building's got, you know, mortar shells taking half of it out and bullet holes, you know.
It's probably going to have the same impact 40 years from now, 50 years from now, that what we see when we look back to World War II. And the same, except way worse, because we actually saw some motivation behind World War II. This time around, it's going to be like, we did what for what? It just doesn't make any sense.
See, this is all just to lead to a major conflict, and I'm worried about the future. I think most people can feel something big's about to happen.
Well,
I predict there's going to be some false flag attack on America here, and it's going to drive the sentiment to go to lead to this new coalition of a worldwide force to stamp out terrorism, and we're going to hire, what did they call for, like a 30,000-40,000 mercenary group from all countries of the world to just go around the world at a whims, at, you know, whenever our world leaders deem necessary to go stomp out terrorism. And all it's going to be is the military arm of the, lack of a better world, the word, the New World Order, and the New World Government, and it's so sad to see the idea of sovereignty and sovereign mindset in people, and to where all these little Ebola, ISIL, terrorism, all this crap that's just thrown in our face to drum up this mindset of people that we need to have a strong government, we need to have a world force, we need to be able to fight these things, and It's driving to a
world. All we need.
And it's a sad state of affairs.
All we need is a 2,500 point drop in the DJI, and you're going to see craziness start happening.
In the what?
Dow Jones. I think you see a 2,500 point drop, and all hell is going to break loose. I think that's all the motivation that they're going to need to start launching all of these plans.
Why would the stock market... Why would that make it that way?
All it takes is any type of a price correction. I mean, it's volatile enough already.
Well, stuff like that is going around the world as right now. So why isn't the rest of the world calling for it?
Well, because what other country in the world
is
in a position?
Doing really good right now. The dollar is actually really strong right now.
Right, but for how long?
And
obviously. I mean, obviously, we've noticed that in our gas prices, they've gone way down. I mean, like, way down, significantly. 70 cents a gallon, something like that, for premium? That's insane.
It's still season right now. You have to keep that in mind. This is a low-demand season, so gas prices are always low in end of September.
Yeah, but I haven't seen this price, Eric, in 6 years, 7 years, something like that.
It should be this low.
It should be lower than this.
It's cheap.
It's a combination of the dollar strengthening because the worldwide forex community or fiat community betting that the U.S. dollar is getting stronger and will continue to get stronger because the Federal Reserve is going to discontinue QE, which stops in October, and they're going to begin to start raising interest rates. Or at least that's the bet, mid-2015, this is a shoulder season where you have cooler temperatures, less driving, less energy demand, so that puts a downward pressure on energy prices. So you have stronger dollar, downward pressure on energy prices because of less demand, and then also more supply on the market, really because of U.S. domestic output. You know, specifically in the southern part of the United States, and then also in areas like Kentucky, Pennsylvania, and North Dakota, which are producing higher rates of oil and natural gas. So there's like
true. All this is true.
Production. I mean, there's a bunch of ships just floating around the world full of oil. Right. That's been happening for years.
There's just,
and it's been artificially expensive just to keep it expensive. And now you can only do that for so long.
You're right. You're totally right. But we're getting so sidetracked right now. Yeah. We're talking about the completely wrong topic.
Sure.
So
let's get back on. On the Middle East. So.
Let's get a clip going, maybe.
Let's do that Syria overview just to have a little basis of what has happened in the last 60 years in Syria. If you don't mind, or should we just skip that?
No, let's have the clip. So this is a little under 4 minutes, and this gives an overview of Syrian politics, so rebel and governmental politics. I'll roll the clip now.
Good morning, Hank. It's Tuesday. Today I want to help you understand what's going on in Syria. And I know that you're on the internet, so you're constantly being distracted by, like, photographs of Ryan Gosling and homoerotic Sherlock watercolors, but just give me 4 minutes! Okay, so our story begins in 1946 with Syria declaring independence and getting a flag. Syria was briefly a parliamentary republic, but it never really took, and in the first 10 years they had 4 different constitutions and, like, a gajillion changes in government. They were led by this guy, and this guy, and this guy, and this guy. A couple important things. First, in 1956, Syria signed a pact with the Soviet Union, promising to dabble in communism and exchange for guns and tanks and stuff. Also in 1958, Syria and Egypt briefly decided to become the same country, the United Arab Republic, which of course necessitated a new flag. But then in 1961, Syria was like, we're seceding and we're going back to our old flag. This led to a big mess and a couple coups, culminating with the Ba'ath Party taking control in 1963. With a new flag. Hank, you may remember the Ba'ath Party from Iraq. Ba'athism is a secular, that is, non-religious political philosophy that advocates for a socialist pan-Arab state. Ba'ath means Renaissance. The idea was that all the Arabs would unify and have this awesome utopia. It didn't work. Alright, let's get back to 1970 when heretofore Defense Minister Hafez al-Assad becomes president of Syria via bloodless coup, which is my favorite kind of coup. Hafez al-Assad really oversaw the first stable period in Syrian history. He passed a constitution, he established a state-run economy that led to significant growth in per capita GDP. He also killed a lot of dissidents, disastrously invaded Israel in 1973, and in 1976 entered the Lebanese civil war, first on one side, then on the other, thereby beginning a Syrian occupation of Lebanon that would last for almost 30 years. That occupation was not popular, particularly since Syria had a habit of assassinating Lebanese politicians. Also, he changed the flag twice, once in 1972 and then again in 1980. One more thing about Hafez al-Assad. He was Alawi. Alawism is a sect of Shiism with some very unusual beliefs. For instance, unlike most Muslims, they don't believe that praying 5 times a day is mandatory, and also, unlike most Muslims, they celebrate Christmas. Al-Assad tried to bring Alawism into the Islamic mainstream. For instance, he prayed in public and he built a lot of mosques, but still, to a lot of Sunni and even Shia Muslims, Alawists are seen as apostates. Okay, so in 2000, Hafez al-Assad died, and the Syrian parliament immediately passed a law reducing the minimum age for president from 40 to 34. You'll never guess who was 34 at the time, unless you guess it was al-Assad's son, Bashar. So Bashar al-Assad is immediately elected president of Syria with 97.9% of the vote, a statistic that is slightly less impressive when you consider that no one else was allowed on the ballot, and there is widespread hope that Bashar al-Assad will bring reform. Not so much. That said, no one foresaw how he would respond to the pro-democracy Arab Spring protest that began in early 2011. Soldiers who refused to fire on civilians were summarily executed, entire towns were bombed, torture was widespread, tens of thousands were arrested. The UN estimates that in the last year, more than 10,000 people, most of them unarmed civilians, have been killed in Syria. And Hank, while this fight is definitely not about religion, it's important to understand that most of the pro-democracy opposition is Sunni Muslim, and that Assad still enjoys significant support among many Alawis and Christians. And now Syria finds itself in a civil war. The UN Security Council has tried to act on this, but both Russia and China have vetoed all resolutions about Syria, possibly because of, like, old Cold War ties, possibly because of what they see as failed intervention in Libya, and possibly because Russia's only naval port in the Middle East is in Syria. So at the moment, violence continues and there is no clear path forward. Like, Syria has been expelled from the Arab League and sanctions will drag down the Syrian economy, but will any of that force al-Assad to resign? And if he does, can Syria return to stability, or will it again find itself having like three coups a year? It's worth remembering that the pro-democracy opposition's flag is this, the one that flew over Syria during all its coups and instability. But those people want freedom and representative government, and the Syrian regime is massacring them for it. So should we help? And if so, how?
A Russian port there. That's interesting.
Very interesting.
It's kind of a common denominator between Crimea, what is it, Crimea in Ukraine?
Crimea.
Crimea, yep. And what's going on there?
Well, it's like when we talked about Ukraine's circumstance, that was manufactured by us to the coup of Ukraine, which was forcing Putin's hand. And it, we're doing the same thing in Syria. And Putin was the only one that really stopped our, it wasn't only the grassroots campaign that stopped the war in Syria. It was also Putin at the UN level. And, I mean, he's the one that gets credit for it. And so ever since, this now ISIS pops up, ISIL. And now, lo and behold, we got to go take out Assad. I don't know how ISIS is the reason we got to take out Assad again, but when they're supposedly fighting Assad. But now we need to apparently help ISIL. Which would only, and then my prediction is if we go in there and overthrow Assad, all of a sudden ISIL will end up taking over Syria, just like in theory that Syria and Iraq and form their own little government there and spread their influence that way. But I don't know. I don't think any of this is supposed to succeed or fail. This is all just to create a mess and to create fear in the world and to create a reason for more action in the world. And this is all just to lead to something bigger, in my opinion. And what's bigger? Another world war against Russia and China and possibly Brazil. Whoever's fighting the petrodollar, but that could that's my opinion. But I don't know. What do you guys think of these beheading videos?
False flag.
Yep. Yeah, they're obviously fake. No one's watched them, and yet they continually say that, you know, oh my God, what was that workplace incident down in Oklahoma? Where they said this person got beheaded, and what was it? It was just that they got their throat slit?
I've not heard of that.
You didn't hear about it? This was just like 2-3 weeks ago now that all of a sudden all over Drudge Report at the time, mm-hmm. Oh, beheading in Oklahoma. And I was pretty sure that what happened was someone just went in there and slit someone's throat, and then they called it a beheading. Just to create that, while at the same time they've been hyping, ISIL is going to come and attack America. They're coming through the border. They're ready. They're here. We're ready to fight you, America. And then and as soon as this little workplace crazy guy went in and slit someone's throat, the media all jumped on it right away and called it a beheading.
Have either one of you actually seen a graphic beheading? I think there have been 3 or 4 now.
There has been 3 I know of.
Is it 3?
I have intentionally avoided watching those videos.
I've actually looked for them, and I haven't found them.
But it's pretty.
You've actually looked for them?
Yeah, I've looked for them, and I haven't.
You couldn't
found
find them on No Agenda?
Well, I haven't seen
show notes.
I haven't seen a graphic example. Have you seen a graphic example?
Because they don't exist.
What? Wait a second. You haven't been able to find them, period?
Period. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
They keep taking them down.
I've made a concerted effort to find.
No, that's one thing. Okay, hang on, though, Kirk.
Or video, and I haven't found anything.
Kirk, I'm going to illustrate this point. One thing about the internet, Kirk, is anything that gets onto the internet is always on the internet. That's why all these celebrities who just had their nudes leaked are so pissed off. Because it's always on the internet. It doesn't go away.
Always so they can't. But on the mainstream searches, you will not be able to find
no,
it.
No, but you're talking to
you
Eric.
You have to have a little Eric, experience and yeah. not go down into the dark web pretty much. And these.
No, you don't need to go to dark web to find something like that. It should be on the. It should easily be on the light web. You don't need to hide this kind of thing.
Yeah. I haven't found anything.
They all these companies said they wiped it clean. If it ever gets put on any of their host sites, they take it down. And this is also leading to more internet control that the government calls for because people that are interested in joining ISIL are going to search us out and be emboldened by it. And, you know, we can't let that happen, so we need to wipe it clean. It's everything behind it is just crap. And it's all 30 seconds, 5 to 30 second news clips that just drive the fear through the populace.
Yeah. And the point that I'm making is, and I made a concerted effort to find some images or videos, and I haven't seen anything.
That's what's so funny is because, apparently ISIL is so smart that they don't make the videos with the gore so they don't get taken down right away. That they fade out when they're apparently they're cutting people's heads off, and then they come back and with a head sitting on top of the body. Give me a break.
Yeah, and honestly, the head sitting on top of the body photographs that I've seen do not look. I mean, I'm not an expert in Photoshop, but they do not look legit, or
well,
even
first
close
one
to legit.
Even came out as provenly a forgery.
Like they all look very photoshopped to me, and like I said, I'm not an expert. I've done a lot of photoshopping in my past, but.
Well, people that are
they look pretty bad.
Shadow of lines don't is what is the dead giveaway.
Right, and they don't. Yeah, honestly, they don't look like they. I'm looking at them right now. They look horribly faked.
Yeah,
like, I've seen horror videos with better Photoshop skills. So
well, exactly, but like you said, why would you go out there to search it out and look for it? No one is going to go search it out to look for it. Especially with this whole NSA spies on you, and you don't want that on your record to go out there and look that stuff up. I'll just the propaganda is just too good to be true. I mean, it's just the perfect little stunt that no one will go out there, and no news source is ever going to play it on TV or show the images. And then no one's going to go out there and search for it anyways. And then the people that do, that find out, all of a sudden you're a kook or a conspiracy theorist for even questioning the government. Or the media.
So with that, should we roll another clip that kind of goes over, we went over the long-term Syrian situation. Let's go over ISIS in Iraq and Syria. Up to the modern day and listen to this clip.
Oh dear. Just when you thought the Iraq problem was solved because you haven't heard about it for a while, everything's back to murderous chaos and terror. What happened? In 2003, the US invaded Iraq because of its alleged connections to terrorism and weapons of mass destruction. At the time, Saddam Hussein, a brutal dictator, ruled the country. He was part of the Sunni minority and suppressed the Shia majority. Iraq was conquered fairly quickly, but the US had no plan for the country. The until-then-suppressed Shia majority took over and began oppressing the Sunnis because suppressing other faiths has proven to be such a good idea. Unsurprisingly, a Sunni rebel uprising began, and terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda trickled into Iraq, and local forces, often former Sunni military, began fighting the US troops and the newly formed Iraqi state, peaking in a bloody civil war in 2006. Since then, people in Iraq have basically been segregated by religion. So, in a tragic irony of history, the US invasion led to the formation of the very terrorists the US wanted to eliminate in the first place, because Iraq was now the perfect training ground for terrorism. To understand this complicated conflict better, we need to understand the relationship between the two main branches of the Muslim faith, Shia and Sunni Islam. Sunnis make up about 80% of the Muslim world, and Shia about 20%. and the hardliners on both sides don't like each other very much. Saudi Arabia and Iran are the two most powerful players in the game of faiths. They both have no separation of state and religion, domestic problems, and a lot of oil money. And they support groups that fight the other religious orientation. And one of those terror organizations supported by Saudi Arabia was the Islamic State in Iraq, or ISI for short. In 2010, the Arab Spring happened and changed the whole situation in the Middle East. In Syria, dictator Bashar al-Assad didn't think much of resigning and started a gruesome civil war against his own people. The longer the war went on, the more foreign groups joined the fight, most of them for religious reasons and with the goal of building an Islamic State in the region. And one of them was the infamous ISI, which now became the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, or ISIS. They had fought in Iraq for years and had thousands of well-trained and fanatic soldiers. They already quasi-controlled parts of northern Iraq and were very determined to build their religious state. And they changed the game in Syria like no one expected. ISIS was so unbelievably violent and radical that soon it was at war with almost every other faction of the Syrian rebel armies. They attacked and killed members of other Muslim terrorist groups. In the territories they controlled, they built an Islamic State with rules so strict that even the hardliners of Al-Qaeda and Saudi Arabia were shocked and withdrew their support. ISIS has been accused of responsibility for multiple massacres against civilians, countless suicide bombings, the hostage taking of women and children, the execution of their prisoners and beheadings. All kinds of medieval horrors we would rather not have to illustrate. And this lovely gathering of human beings recently decided it was time to take more territory in Iraq. Since the US left Iraq, the Shia Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki has monopolized power and discriminated against Sunnis wherever possible. The government of Iraq is widely regarded as being corrupt, incapable, and it's certainly hated by a large part of its citizens. The Iraqi army, consisting of about 300,000 soldiers, was created using $25 billion US dollars in tax money, but it's not loyal to its government and has been withdrawing or completely disbanding, giving up city after city. Because ISIS has announced that everyone who opposes them will be killed, they have proven they mean business. By June 2014, they'd conquered a big chunk of Iraq, including Mosul, Iraq's second largest city. They'd stolen hundreds of millions from captured banks, making them the richest terror organization on Earth. And they are constantly working on establishing a super medieval religious state. Iran and the US are even considering working together to fight them. That's how gruesome the situation is. Events in Iraq show again that exploiting the people you've defeated in a war, denying them power, a living and a stake in the rebuilding of the country, is just sowing the seeds of the next bout of violence.
Pretty much.
Well then.
Yeah, but God, there was something I was going to say.
Let's finish up the clip.
Now, all right.
We have to break the circle.
We have to break the circle.
Well, I think we're seeing the same organizations being renamed over and over again. Lots of pumped up people, and there's enough people in order to create shell organizations very quickly. And as long as you fund them by organizations who have the money, you can continue to create an enemy that we can fight against continually.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting, and you know, specifically in that video, how in Iraq, 80% of the population is Sunni. But yet the Iraqi government is Shia, which is 20% of the population, and has been financed by the U.S. government to a tune of $25 billion since they've taken over power. And that doesn't seem to be a winning formula to me.
No, not at all.
Financing, you know, kind of a militant minority, generally can bring back hostile feelings towards the United States and Western powers.
Well, anybody who's got a decent ability to market something with some money behind it, no press is bad press, you know. You've got, you'll drum up emotions that are deep-seated against the United States, and you're able to drum more people into it. I mean, You look at it even in a recruitment sense in the U.S., the youth are very malleable. They're very quick to emotion. They're willing to jump behind a movement, and as long as there's a movement that motivates them, you've got people there. I mean, it really doesn't take much. It's enough to get their heart beating a little quicker, and they'll all stand together, and they're happy to do it. You know, I think that's part of the reason why they put a cap on the age that you could be drafted, because you'd just be toxic to the rest of the people around you. Yeah, let's draft this 30-year-old guy, and one of us shows up. I think that'd be bad news for the rest of the people around. Yeah, we're just going to set our guns down. We don't believe in this anymore. So, but that's I think the kind of the crux of the entire thing is you've gotta have an enemy. It has to be there, or else we're not propping up number one the military industrial complex, which is a huge industry in the United States, absolutely massive. It was warned against in World War II, or at the end of World War II. By, was it Eisenhower? Was he the...
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
So Eisenhower stood up and he said...
Presidential term.
I don't have the clip. I think we've played it on the show before, right? I think we have, anyway.
I can play it if we want to.
It's all
right. If you have it available, I'll introduce it really quick. But the clip basically says...
I probably do. I need to... How long is this? It's only 2.5 minutes long.
Yeah, it's short. Basically, he's saying be wary of the military-industrial complex, but
Let's roll it.
Play it. Yeah, roll it. Roll it on. Remember 50%, bro.
All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
Good evening, my fellow Americans. We now stand 10 years past the midpoint of a century that has witnessed 4 major wars among great nations. Until the latest of our world conflicts, the United States had no armaments industry. American makers of plowshares could, with time and as required, make swords as well. But we can no longer risk emergency improvisation of national defense. We have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportions. Added to this, 3.5 million men and women are directly engaged in the defense establishment. Now, this conjunction of an immense military establishment and a large arms industry is new in the American experience. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development, yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil, resources, and livelihood are all involved. So is the very structure of our society. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper together.
That's coming from a guy who basically led the effort to win World War II.
And he's the wisdom lies today, and I think it's as applicable today as it was then. I think there's absolutely a lot of motivation to throw some money behind some of these organizations to make it seem like a legitimate threat, something that we need to put money behind. Just to continue motivating people to bomb these unfortunate people who are in areas that may or may not be engaged in any kind of a anti-United States effort. I think they probably don't give a crap.
What's the end game? What's our goal? What's the goal of the military-industrial complex? What's their
mission?
To go and just to keep the money flowing, just to go spend resources?
That's it. There is no goal there. It's. You think there's a goal?
Yeah.
What do you think, Kirk?
Future conflicts.
So to keep the money going.
So how does this affect liberty and our liberty and liberty in the world? This ISIS matter, ISIL. So apparently they're so bad that they go around, they're just butchering everyone that's not part of the jihad, a devout faith, faithful Muslim.
They're raping lots of women.
I haven't seen evidence of that.
No, I'm saying this is the media.
Well, I don't know. It's that whole Flames of War, their little hour-long video. It's just, it's a call to action. It's a call to get supporters. So as, that's why I say it's just driving a future conflict. The more we fight back, it's a lose-lose situation. The more we go and fight them, unless we go and just completely eradicate them, but obviously we don't want to do that for the people that want this reason to go over there and fight. But I just, to me, it's there is no end game in the local vicinity of the matter at hand. This is a global battle being set up, and the future is not going to be bright in the next decade if this continues right now, because in my opinion, this is obviously leading towards greater and greater conflicts that's going to just start spilling all over.
What's different about this between the last 24 years of war that we've been in?
Because they're directly calling out us to come and bring the fight to them.
I think that's been done before.
In this context.
Who has ever called us out to come fight them?
I think Al-Qaeda crashed planes into buildings in our country. I mean, I think that was a pretty direct call to action.
That's an indirect call to action. That is not a direct call to action.
Dude, I would say that's
And who's to say that it was, they were really... And some people say that ISIS, Al-Qaeda, is the same, created by the same entities.
And it very well could be. I'd agree with that.
So that's my point. But they didn't have videos beforehand saying, all right, we're going to fly these planes in America, then into New York, and then so you guys come in to fight us. No, that's they did not say anything remotely close to that. And they celebrated it, and they acted, all puffing their chests out, but that was the extent of it. And
it
was the people of America that rose up to go fight it. It was the government,
right?
Let the people, the outrage happen to right. Go stir up the populace, and then all right, now we got to go fight them. We got to go to Afghanistan and fight Al Qaeda.
Let me ask you this:
this is completely different.
You're saying it's completely different. I feel like this is cyclical, and I think the first time we saw it was George Bush Sr. when he originally started getting involved with Iraq, and he started a war, and then we saw a Democrat president come in for 8 years, and he started bombing Baghdad and other areas. But there's a very popular Black Eyed Peas song that was inspired by his behavior. And then we had...
Can we elaborate more on why these wars happened?
But no, just hang on.
Natural resources and geopolitical. That would be the two primary drivers behind.
We had Saddam thumbing the petrodollar, in a sense, and taking
oil
over Kuwait. And that was affecting the whole... circle of the petrodollar and the oil flow.
Right, right. But, you know, hear me out here. So then we had a Democrat president who bombed a little bit, and then we got another Republican president, and that Republican president hopped in and said, all right, we're going to war after we had 9/11, and then we went directly into conflict. And now we're back to a Democrat president who's saying, okay, I'm pulling everything out. We pulled a few troops out. We're still at war in Afghanistan. But now we're looking at another situation which could, if it escalated, justify bringing ground troops back into the same area. I feel like it's very cyclical. And I honestly, this is my opinion, I don't think that we've had a legitimate administration since before Jimmy Carter. I think the administration's been a quote-unquote shadow slash puppet administration since Jimmy Carter in 1977. I think my entire life we've had administrations that were influenced by outside forces.
Well,
that's all politics is in general.
But that it's not leading to my point, though, is this ISIL thing is a completely different scenario. When's the last time anyone's poked the bear, specifically the United States, and said, bring the fight to us?
Saddam Hussein trying to blow off George H.W. Bush's head.
When was this?
It was in Kuwait, I think in 93. It was shortly after, maybe 93 or 94, when he tried to – Hussein basically tried to take out Bush when he was in Kuwait.
Yeah, but he's not saying, come fight me then.
That's good. Is that not saying?
That's indirectly, though. That's my whole point. Everything is indirect. That, all right, yeah. So, and it still depends on how the media portrays everything as well. Let me remind you that things happen like this all the time that the media just washes over and doesn't allow the public to get an outrage. Mm-hmm. There are the times, though, that the media portrays it then to drive that indirect manner into a direct result. We have a situation now that I have never witnessed of ISIL directly asking for us to come and bring the fight to them. If they don't, they're bringing the – if we don't, they're bringing the fight to us. That is something completely different than I have ever seen in my lifetime or even researched. I mean, this is – it's theatrical in my opinion.
I don't think it's a – I think the reason why I'm not understanding what you're saying here and not responding the way that I should be is that I feel like it's – like I understand what you're asking now, and I just – I feel like it's so non-factor that I haven't considered it up to this point.
Well, that's – but that's my point. It's such a different scale is that they're actually asking for a fight. I mean, who –
So Kurt.
Al-Qaeda just said death to America, death,
Kurt.
You know.
Is that what it takes, though? Is that what it takes for the industrial complex now? Like, our entire generation is saying, screw this. We don't want to be in war anymore. We're at 24 years of being in war at this point. I've got multiple friends leaving the military.
England was bombing Iraq before we ever started bombing Iraq.
I don't care.
I mean, years.
But what I'm saying is we're at like 24 years now. I've got friends who are leaving the military, have been deployed over 4 times, and we're all saying, screw this. So do we need like an actual enemy who's standing out there saying, you know what, come get me, enough to get us jazzed up again?
Here's my question. Here's my question, and I think I know where Kirk's going with this. What do you think the motivation is, Kirk? What do you think the motivation is behind the beheading videos, the propaganda that you see on most media outlets that say that ISIL or ISIS is going to bring the attack to us. What do you think the driving motivation behind that propaganda is?
To prime us.
For what?
For future outrage.
Against what?
We will soon find out.
So you don't have...
I don't know.
Yep.
I have no idea. None of it makes sense.
But it's a propaganda tool,
but
is basically
no, to me, it's priming the pump. This is all just mental manipulation for the public, for the world stage. It's not just America. This is for the world right now, and it's just priming the pump of whatever future event's going to happen that's going to just send shockwaves around the world of outrage, and that something has to be done. Let's mobilize the nations. Let's mobilize this world to stomp this out.
So this will probably be the last clip I play. This clip is about...
Before you do that, can I say something real quick, though?
Yep.
When we were wanting to go to war with Syria a year ago, there was a chemical attack. And all of our State Department and our media pointed the finger at Assad. And it was revealed in the world stage that Assad did not release that chemical warfare. But yet, still today, you can still hear politicians and our media reference Assad and the chemical attack as it was a fact. That was a priming of the pump. Mm-hmm. Now, that didn't work. Putin and grassroots organizations stopped that war in Syria a year ago. Now all of a sudden this ISIL came out of nowhere, heavily equipped, heavily armed, plenty of money, plenty of training, and just enough troops and just enough technical knowledge in how to go and take out these cities and certain army bases of Syria, and which requires a lot of reconnaissance and probably satellite imagery and knowledge of it's just finding the weak point and exploiting it and going through with precision of, I would say, likely special forces and for the amount of troops that they use. And then they'd sit there and turn around and thumb their nose at America, create these videos, create this PR just to create fear. And it's just another whole scapegoat to, and then to hear our politicians say this is an excuse to go and attack Syria again. Nothing makes sense. This is all just pure propaganda, pure fear mongering and priming people, and this is all just leading to a bigger event. And I'm worried about the future, and I hate to have to worry about my neighbors how they're going to react.
So this ties perfectly into the clip, and this answers some of those questions.
With respect to the issue of the United States taking military action against ISIS or ISIL or IL, whatever they are calling this organization right now, my response to the people that have been asking me about this is that if you want to get to the root of the problem and remove this organization, the first thing they need to do is remove the funding and take care of the entities responsible for the creation of this group, and that would bring the forces here at home, because clearly this is entirely a farce. This is a completely fabricated enemy. The funding is completely from the United States and its allies. And for people to think that this enemy is something that needs to be attacked in Syria or Iraq is a farce, because obviously this is something that we created, that we control, and only now it has become convenient for us to attack this group as a legitimate enemy. And clearly when they say that they don't need permission to go into Syria and attack that country, one can only imagine how long it will be before they are dropping bombs on the home of Bashar Assad. So I think that this is a complete farce, and I think that the American public, I would like to believe that they are not completely ignorant of the source of this, but obviously these tactics that they are using with the executions, the videotaped executions or alleged executions, are designed to create massive amounts of fear and cause a response here at home, or a knee-jerk reaction, if you will, to authorize more spending and more bloodshed and more warfare. But again, this is not to change the subject, but this is almost like Ebola, which everyone is also getting upset about, and we know that this has been patented by the U.S. government, and this is just another terror weapon. So I believe that this ISIS group would probably go away and would be easily defeated by the armies of Bashar Assad, perhaps, if they were left alone to their own ways and their own sources of funding. I am very disappointed that so many people think that this is an attractive group to join, but I suspect that there are people who are disillusioned with the current power structure of the world, and they think that this may be an effective way of making a lot of big changes in the world. But ultimately, I believe that this terror organization is a complete fabrication, and that the true source of the problem is probably ultimately going to rest within our own government, or perhaps even banking cabals and rough.
What do you think about that, Kirk?
Who was that?
It was a former CIA contractor, Stephen D. Kelly. He worked for the CIA and the NSA.
He doesn't still work for them?
He's a former.
Okay.
We haven't heard much. All we hear is these few clips about what they're doing, the outrage of the beheadings and these mass supposed murders that they do. But they can take cities, but they can also lose cities. And apparently what I've heard is that Syria was taking back lost ground, that some of their main highways that ISIL started to control were taken back and opening up their movement of their economy or whatever was relying on these roadways. But it is, for how ISIL can take over the city or whatever vicinity they are, they can easily lose it. And that is my point. It's watching that Flame of War video is just pathetic to say that this is some strong grassroots organization that arose out of nowhere to just create this fear massive worldwide, and they're sitting there, we're going to take over the world. Europe, we're coming for you. America, you're next. And then to hear politicians go out there and say the same thing is absolutely ridiculous. And there's a driving mechanism behind it, and that is what should be on the forefront. And for this BS to be spewed on us nonstop in the era of the technological advancements we have today, the free flow of information, that 10 years today from now, all the politicians should be cowering in fear that this is going to be outed in the future. And that's even more damning to me is that, what's going to happen to be able in the future that's going to prevent this from ever seeing the light of day, because there's going to be such new events that's going to make you forget that any of this bullshit ever happened, and that these new events just shed the way that we're so primed for this now, that there's going to be some new events that create this thing that's going to whitewash any of the doubt we ever had before. And it's also going to be another false flag, but that's my fear. And I wish we had time to play some of the clips of McCain and clip that we had?
Wesley Clark?
Not Wesley Clark. The other, I don't know. There's just politician after
Panetta.
Politician. And what about Rand Paul? He was all for to go attack ISIL. That was the most time I've been disappointed in Rand Paul I've seen yet. And that was 2-3 weeks ago that he went out there and said, yeah, we should bring the fight to ISIL.
Well, I did not know about that. Now I'm super disappointed.
Yes, that it was very disappointing to me.
Did he? Well, here's what Rand Paul said about ISIS, and I don't think that aligns up exactly to what you're
talking
about.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
There are times when a president would move quickly to dispel an imminent threat to our country. But where I disagree with the president is his theory in Libya was that there was an imminent threat to Benghazi. That's not what an imminent threat is. It's an imminent threat to our country. And so what I would say is that the Shiites who are ripping their uniforms off and running need to stand up and fight. And could we assist them in some way? I'm not ruling that out. But I would first wait to see, are the Shiites going to fight for their country or not?
Let me play you something that one of your Republican colleagues said, Senator Marco Rubio. He was talking about why this is important, and he does believe that national security is at stake.
The reason why we care is because we cannot allow a safe haven to develop there that can be used to carry out attacks that can kill Americans, including here in our homeland.
So do you believe that the ISIS is a national security threat to the United States?
Well, do you know where the safe haven is? The safe haven's in Syria. So those who have been, let me finish. Because the thing is that they would not be empowered in Iraq if we were not providing safe haven in Syria by arming their allies.
So should we go to Syria? I mean, the thing is, we are where we are.
No,
so
we are where we are because we armed the Syrian rebels. We have been fighting alongside Al-Qaeda, fighting alongside ISIS. ISIS is now emboldened and in two countries. But here's the anomaly. We're with ISIS in Syria. We're on the same side of the war. So those who want to get involved to stop ISIS in Iraq are allied with ISIS in Syria. That is the real contradiction to this whole policy.
Right. And many of your Republican colleagues would argue that what we should have done in Syria was get rid of Assad, and that would have stopped ISIS in his tracks.
But we've done that in Libya. We went into Libya and we got rid of that terrible Gaddafi. Now it's a jihadist wonderland over there. There's jihadists everywhere. If we were to get rid of Assad, it would be a jihadist wonderland in Syria. It's now a jihadist wonderland
exactly.
in Iraq. Right. Precisely because we got over-involved, not because we had too little involvement, but too much involvement.
And here we are. Can a terrorist haven in Iraq, does a terrorist haven in Iraq, which it may be soon, threaten the national security of the U.S.?
Which it may be soon.
Well, it could at some point. I would say right now, if you are a member of ISIS...
Let's make up this situation sometime in the future that might happen.
ISIS is right now in the middle of a battle saying, I think we're going to send intercontinental ballistic missiles to America. So could they be a threat? Yes. But what I would say...
Yeah, ISIS has that technology.
Well, we should have not armed them. If we wouldn't have armed them in Syria, maybe they wouldn't be in Iraq.
Right?
So the past is 6 months ago. The past is still the current as well. It is the present. We are still arming the radical Islamic rebels in Syria. So the homeland, they're going back and forth across the border. They go back into Syria, and that is a homeland that we are helping to defend for them.
How do you stop that?
Well, let's not be involved in the Syrian civil war, and let's not be involved in the Iraq civil war. I think that
out altogether.
Well, there's an idea.
What I would say is that Maliki is an ally. Although here's the thing: they think they're going to create stability by pushing Maliki out in the middle of a war. So we push him out, and then we have another power vacuum, and nobody leading the country at all. What I would say is, and my prediction is, that Maliki will stand up and the Shiites will stand up, that ISIS will not be able to take Baghdad, and there will be a civil war over there, but there'll be a civil war with feckless people on one side that aren't necessarily great allies of ours, who are allies of Iran, and on the other side, allies of Al-Qaeda. You have to ask yourself, are you willing to send your son? Am I willing to send my son to retake back a city, Mosul, that they weren't willing to defend themselves? I'm not willing to send my son into that mess.
Let me move you to a different...
I hope not.
Yeah, I never
That's
heard
a little
Rand
different
Paul
than
Durkin
what you were saying,
about
Kirk.
It. I just saw some Facebook stuff from Rand Paul 2016, which isn't directly Rand Paul's words, and I just assumed that it was a direct quote from him, but because it's definitely not run by Rand Paul.
Yeah.
But, it was just glossing over it, and it looked like he was promoting putting up a fight against ISIL. It was a couple of weeks ago. I can't remember exactly what
it was.
Yeah,
it's not quite what we just heard, so unfortunately.
Fortunately. It's definitely Rand Paul talks a little more reason than anyone else out there saying that ISIL is an imminent threat against Americans. To me, I don't get why we so fear a terrorist attack. It just exposes how weak our economy is, how it's a house of cards, that any little incident that happens in America is supposedly going to just bring down the system, bring down our economy.
I don't feel like it's like that, though, Kirk. I don't think it's a direct threat to our economy.
I don't either.
Well, you just said if the Dow dropped 2,500 points.
2,500 is significant. I think that's enough to influence the powers that be to cause another drastic thing to draw attention away from the economy, from the dollar, to keep the current economic policies going as they are.
It is a huge bubble right now. Any little attack, any little major terrorist attack would send shockwaves, and it would drop by that much, is my opinion.
Possibly.
It just exposes the weaknesses of what we've developed as a culture and the spoiledness that we all have grown up in and that we live with this economy. I mean, it's just nothing is solid. That everything's built upon all this fiat currency, that it is just a massive bubble waiting to explode.
You know what's solid?
And my fear is that this is laying the priming of the pump to pop it on purpose to create massive turmoil.
You know what's solid?
Hmm.
The fact that, and I think I've alluded to this multiple times, that there is an age of innovation that's occurring, and it's exponential.
Fear it. Nothing is more terrifying to all the people that control whatever they control these days. The age of innovation is coming at hand, and that is going to relinquish their control that they have right now. And nothing is more fearful for them than that.
And we have that on our side. And with that, Matt, let's wrap this up a little bit.
I've got this.
Head off.
Thank you, Eric. Thank you, Kirk. It's been Eric Taylor, Kirk Pettis, Matt Winterer. This has been Liberty Southwest podcast number 28. Thank you for joining us.
Adios. Thanks, everyone. Mofo.